You're listening to The Philip Jordan Show.
What's up, everybody? Welcome in to the Philip Jordan Show. I am your host, Philip Jordan, in-studio host and producer of Dothan's Football on 96.9, a legend and Auburn writer for Last Word on college football. On today's show, I am going to look back at the Auburn spring game, talk about South Carolina and UConn winning national titles, and John Calipari is no longer at Kentucky. He is now officially the head coach at Arkansas. And I'll be joined by Chris Lee from the Southeastern 14 to talk about UConn winning the title. We will get into John Calipari leaving Kentucky and also some Auburn talk with him as well. And the Palmer Toms from Dogs HQ over on theon3.com. We will discuss Georgia. They're playing a G-Day game this Saturday. So a jam-packed episode of the Philip Jordan Show today. You can check out the Philip Jordan Show podcast over at wiregrassdailynews.com or wherever you get your podcasts. If you're on Apple Podcasts, please follow, rate, and review. Leave a review, and I will read it on a future edition of this show. And if you leave just 4 stars, you are just a straight-up hater. You can email me at sports.philipjordan@gmail.com. All right, before we get to this week's interviews, a couple things I'll talk about. The Auburn spring game, which this was an interesting layout for Auburn. The second SEC team to have a spring game, Missouri had theirs a couple weeks ago. Auburn was this past Saturday. It was a nice day at Auburn, beautiful day, unlike last year when Auburn pretty much had to do their spring game and pour down rain. But obviously the question coming in was quarterback. And the format for the game basically was this. Traditional rules, mostly. The defense was spotted 27 points. So, yes, it was offense versus defense. So, there was a lot of offensive numbers that did get put up by the Auburn Tigers because they had, you know, the offense out there so much. But quarterbacks, obviously, the big thing here with Auburn in the spring game. Peyton Thorne was 9-13 with 133, one touchdown. He did rush for 20 yards. Of course, we know how that works in these spring games. Quarterbacks aren't getting touched. So, but Walker White, the freshman coming in, 5-13, 83 yards. Hank Brown was 5-12 for 103. And then Holden Garner was 7-10 for 46 yards. So looking at the quarterbacks, now I will say this, Peyton Thorne right now, if Auburn had to play a game next week, I would feel like, okay, Peyton Thorne's going to be your quarterback. He looks the most consistent of this group. I ain't saying he looked great. I don't even know if Auburn fans should be optimistic about the quarterback situation if this is how it's going to look. But I'm just saying, I think Peyton Thorne would be the guy right now. Walker White, Hank Brown, they both had some good throws. They had some inconsistencies, though. But I will say this, and a very important thing. None of these quarterbacks turned the ball over. No interceptions by these quarterbacks, which was a very important part of this. Now, the offense started the game was Talis Magoo, incoming freshman kicker. McPherson was out. You know, still nursing an injury, 58-yard field goal to win it, 28-27. So he was a big start again, too. So Auburn's got a good situation at kicker. Obviously, the highlights of the day. Cam Coleman at receiver, 4 catches, 92 yards, 1 touchdown. Had a 49-yard catch from Hank Brown, over-shoulder catch. It was a great catch. He showed the speed on the play. He had another score later in the game, another catch, where he pretty much just outfought the defender for it. And I actually think the Auburn secondary didn't look too bad out there because that's a big question with this team. Now, of course, Robert Lewis, the transfer from Georgia State, I thought he played really well in this spring game. 5 catches, 73 yards. He had a long of 40. And he's the kind of guy you might want to look for with this team to be one as an experienced player with all these young players, all these young receivers. Cannon Brown was another one that I think really did some good things too. It looked like he was working well with the quarterbacks, and he's always been a guy coaches have said, this guy's got potential, but we just have not been able to see it. Well, you know, look, and I know a lot of people are going to say, well, it's just a spring game. Look, yeah, it is, and this is what we have to go off. And I'm just saying what I like, what I saw out of Auburn here. But Robert Lewis is a guy I think he could be a veteran. He could be a state of presence. He can make some plays, make some good catches. He can be dependable in this offense. And, of course, with Perry Thompson, the other 5-star coming this summer, that's going to be the thing. If Cam Colbert, if this is what we're going to see, this guy looks like an elite receiver already. Well, you need a number 2 because if defenses in the SEC particularly find out, okay, this guy we have to take away. You need somebody else to step up. Robert Lewis, Perry Thompson, that's a couple of guys Auburn has that can, I think, be ones that can make some plays and step up and take some pressure off Kim Coleman if he does turn into that number one receiver that he looked like he could be on Saturday in A-Day. Run game, they rushed for 46 yards, but Auburn was airing it out this game, so I just wouldn't be concerned about that. They've got good backs, you know, Damari Austin, Jeremiah Cobb, Jarquez Hunter. I want to interest how they do use Brian Petit when we get to the season. Defensive line was solid. They got pressure on the quarterbacks, so that's something to that's one of the things. Is that an indictment on the offensive line that maybe you should be so concerned about the offensive line or the quarterbacks not getting the ball out quick enough, or is that the defensive line may be good? So we'll see with that. We'll figure that out as we get closer to the season. In the basketball, now, I talked about this a little bit a few weeks ago, but I did Sunday watch the women's national championship game between South Carolina and Iowa, with South Carolina won 87-75. Of course, everybody's got their eyes on this because of Caitlin Clark at Iowa. And first quarter, I tell you what, she was putting on the show, and I really thought she was going to try to single-handedly carry Iowa to national championship. She scored 18 points in the first quarter. Overall in the game, she was 30 points, 10-28, 5-13 from three. They did a much better job rest of the game defending her. She was not getting the same looks. And when she did get looks, she wasn't making them. There were some of her shots she shot that looked short, which I say, okay, she's just getting tired trying to carry this team. Because South Carolina up front, they were great in this game. Cardoso, 15 points, 17 rebounds, and then Chloe Kitts, 11 points, 10 rebounds. I mean, and that was the key thing here, too. And 18-7 advantage in offensive rebounds for South Carolina. To me, that was the difference in the game. South Carolina's players up front, the bigs, were just outplaying Iowa's. Iowa just really did not have anything on the offensive rebounding side of things. And overall rebound, South Carolina won that one, 51-29. Overall shooting, South Carolina shot 48%. Iowa shot 40. Like I said, the three-pointers, Iowa was 9-23, with Caitlin Clark hit 5 of those. And then South Carolina was 8-19. So, and now the thing is here, and congratulations, South Carolina, undefeated season. Great season for Gidon Staley and her team. But now you look at it going forward with Caitlin Clark, can the WNBA capitalize on this? This is going to be big. Now, Indiana Fever had the first pick. Assume that's where she's going to go. But we'll see. Can they capitalize? Because it's a struggle. I believe this is the final year of their TV contract. So it's a very important year for the WNBA. And this summer is going to be big. I'm sure we're going to see a lot of Indiana Fever games on national television because of Caitlin Clark. Of course, there's going to be an adjustment. She's going from college to pro. She'll be playing against the best women basketball players especially in the United States. So we'll see how that goes for them. UConn won another national title going back to back. This team is just dominating. Me and Chris are going to get into this a little bit more in a few minutes. But Battle of the Bigs obviously going into it. Purdue's Zach Edey. And as we record this, he was awarded National Player of the Year back-to-back years. 37 points in this game, 10 rebounds. He was 15-25, 7-10 from free throw line. And early on in this game, he was really dominating up front. I mean, he was – and honestly, single-handedly keeping Purdue in the game. Kind of like I just talked about with Caitlin Clark with Iowa. That's what Zach Edey was doing. And then we looked at the other side, Donovan Klingon. What was he going to do? 11 points, 5 rebounds, 5 of 8. So, and he had some foul trouble late. He had 4 fouls in the game. But obviously, when you're going against Edey, and one of the rare times, you're the shorter of the two in the center matchup. He had some issues, but the guard for UConn. And I felt like going into this game, I just felt like the UConn guards were more athletic than the Purdue guards, and I thought that was going to be a problem. Freshman, Stephon Castle, tremendous game for him, 15 points. Tristan Newton, he had 20, 2 of 5 for 3. Cam Spencer added in 11 as well, just the guard play. And then we really didn't see anything from Purdue. Outside of Braden Smith, he had 12 points. Nobody else really stepped up. So it was a complete team effort here by UConn winning a back-to-back national title. Once again, winning all these games by double digits. I think they averaged – I saw they put the graphic up during the game. It's like 18 points win. And they were up bigger than 15 in this one. After about the first 5-6 minutes of the second half, you really felt like UConn had this one wrapped up. But also, I want to look at this. Purdue, best three-point shooting team percentage-wise and all that stuff. They were 1-7 this game. UConn was 6-22, so they weren't great either. But the fact is, UConn limited Purdue from shooting just 7 threes. They really, really played great defense, locked down on the perimeter, and just did not let Purdue take care of anything. Now, I'm about to play, first up, we will play my interview with Chris Lee. Now, we will get into the John Calipari stuff, but I will say this too. We recorded this on Tuesday. So he had not officially become the head coach of Arkansas. He is now signed a 5-year contract, $7 million a year, $1 million signing bonus, yearly retention bonus of $500,000. There's some NCAA bonuses in there and some rollovers as well. He has a $6 million buyout. And it does look like the top target right now, as this show is recording on a Wednesday evening, that Scott Drew is the number one target for Kentucky. So we'll see. I'm planning on having somebody on the show next week that covers Kentucky. Kentucky's having a spring game this week too, so we're going to talk football and basketball next week with Kentucky on the show. And by the way, we will be back on the normal Wednesday schedule. I had to shift some stuff around. I'm not even sure if you're watching on YouTube or watching anywhere, if you're watching the video, I'm not recording my normal locale. I'm at Studio B right now. But just remember this, Kentucky, they have not been out of the first weekend since 2019. So Arkansas, they're really looking forward to this. We'll see. Great players are going to come to Arkansas with Calipari, but is he going to change a few things? And it'll be very, very interesting to see how that works out for him there at Arkansas. All right, next up, I'm going to play the interviews for you guys. First up will be Chris Lee from the Southeastern 14, where we'll talk about a whole different topics, the national championship game, Kentucky, Alabama basketball, Auburn football. And after that, Georgia G-Day spring game preview with Palmer Tom from Dogs HQ. So here comes the interviews after this 1 minute timeout.
96.9, The Legend is your connection to classic country legend. But Digio Strategies has other options too. News Talk 103.9 is your source for America's top news and entertainment shows like Rick and Bubba in the morning, Glenn Beck from 9 till 11 a.m., and Clay Travis and Buck Sexton middays from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m. Sean Hannity, Lars Larson, Ben Shapiro, Matt Walsh, and others fill your day with the latest news and views from America's top conservative voices. America at Night and Coast to Coast AM keep you company and connected throughout the night. Plus, Fox News, the Alabama Radio Network, and Wiregrass Daily News keep you informed with national, international, state, and local news. And with more musical choices like All the Hits, 106.7 KMX, Today's Country, 95.5 WTVY, and Music 107.7. Digio Strategies gives you more choices and more variety. Listen on air, online, and on our apps. 96.9 The Legend is just the beginning.
Joining me next up on the show, as I promised at the top of the show, Chris Lee. Check him out over at the Southeastern 14 and VandySports.com. And Chris, appreciate the time coming on the show.
Oh, always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely glad to have you on, as always. Y'all do a great job over at Southeastern 14. You know, it's got to be really one of the more, or coming off one of the more busier times with everything on college basketball, then when baseball's going on at the same time, and then spring football's going on. I was talking with somebody a while back. I said, everybody looks at football as a busy time, but the springtime has got to be actually one of the more busier times when you're covering college athletics or a conference like this.
Yeah, I think that probably March is my busiest time, and it kind of busies you to the point of exhaustion. Because you're trying to follow a lot of things. You know, football's always going on in the background. The NCAA tournament and SEC basketball have probably never been a bigger brand, at least in a long time, and well, probably ever. And then you've got baseball, which is probably as strong as it's ever been. It's just, it is a lot to follow.
Yeah, I don't even know the people that also add the softball coverage in there, how they go about doing
it. Yeah, we have drawn the line with that one. We would like to, but you've got to be realistic about what you can do.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I guess that's more like for if you're a beat writer or for a team or something like that, and you're probably jumping around all different places. You know, not SEC related, but obviously, you guys were covering the tournament, everything going on there. Of course, Alabama did not make it to the national championship game, but UConn and Purdue, Monday night's championship game. What, anything special stick out to you about that game?
I just think UConn's dominance to me was a story. You know, Purdue was a really, really good team, and I thought this has got a chance to be, you know, one of the best championship games we've ever seen, and it just never really materialized that way. And I think that had a lot to do with UConn. I mean, I go back and look at them now, and I know Klingon got injured some, but my goodness, you almost wondered in watching them how they ever got beat by anybody. They're so good. The way they were able to choke off Purdue's three-point shooting. I'm not going to say they just gave Edie what he wanted, because they certainly didn't, but he did get, what, 37, 39 points, whatever the tally was, and they weren't easy for him. Klingon did a great job, but I think they were the number one three-point shooting team in the country. And, I mean, I haven't checked it, but I bet the makes and the hits probably for Purdue were season low. And to be able to do all that at once was just amazing. And it's a reason Connecticut was what it was. I think Dan Hurley now, I don't know, best coach in the game might be premature when you got guys like Bill Self and John Calipari that have achieved a lot of things over a longer period of time. But certainly right now he's got that program rolling in a way that nobody else has done lately. And I think it's a testament, because I think it's harder than ever to dominate the game with all the parity and the portal and everything. And just what an amazing run we witnessed for UConn through all of it.
Yeah, I think they're – my average margin of victory was greater this tournament than it was last year. And it was pretty. It was like 14, I think, last year. Now, he threw the stat up during the game last night. I think it was at that time going into last night, Monday night, was like 18 points. Yeah, I got the numbers here. Purdue, 1 of 7 for 3, so they only made one. And UConn was letting them shoot it. And I was going into that game thinking, too, like the big man battle is what everybody's going to focus on between Klingon and Edie. But I was looking, I just thought the UConn guards, the perimeter, was better than Purdue. And you see it with Castle had 15, Tristan Newton had 20. And they really, like you said, pretty much just stopped them from even attempting the three-point shot. So what was your kind of like thoughts going into the game?
My thought going into the game was that the matchup to the bigs was really intriguing. I thought that if any team had a chance to beat Connecticut, it was Purdue because of the combination of not just Zach Edey, but again, the three-point shooting. But the way Connecticut just was able to get out and defend on the perimeter was just an amazing sight to behold. And again, I think that is what won them the game, the ability to do that.
Yeah, if you can lock that off. And like I said, Edey, Chris, I thought Edey was, I mean, at first he was just Dawson. Is he just going to score all the Purdue points, which he almost did.
Yeah.
Braden Smith's the only other player that went over 10. I mean, if you just look at the box score for Purdue, not a lot of players scored last night. I got in front of me, five players scored. So that's not going to do any good in these big time games.
Yeah, you needed one of those guards to pop up and give you 20 if you're Purdue to have a good shot to win, and that just wasn't going to happen last night.
Which Heidi, their forward, did have an awesome dunk. Give him that. He had one of the better highlights. So I was watching the game. I was just sitting in my recliner watching the game. And, Chris, I partially got up out of my seat when I saw that dunk. It was just one of those highlights. You know, they lost, but still great with them. Talk about Alabama. Of course, talking about they did not make a turn. I mean, they gave UConn a great game. It felt like Saturday night in that matchup against UConn, every time Alabama got close, you know, or they got a little bit of a lead, UConn will separate. That's what championship teams do. I mean, Alabama was red hot there in the first half, shooting a three, and obviously that was going to be their route if they were to upset UConn. Of course, we know they didn't. But this run for Alabama overall, in your mind, how did Alabama do it? Because going into the tournament, they were 5-5. They got eliminated by Florida in the quarterfinals of the SEC tournament. That was their second loss in that span to Florida. I mean, they had a couple overtime wins, but Alabama was not playing well. And then I was of the mindset, I was questioning, could they get out of the first weekend and they make it all the way to the Final Four? Just watching this team as they progressed, what did you see different out of Alabama versus what you saw out of them during the season?
Well, look, I was even a little more skeptical than you were. I saw that Alabama had been given trouble by teams that were able to play fast at times, like Florida, and outdo what they did at things, maybe by defending a little better. And I thought that Charleston was a team. You always kind of pick your upsets in the tournament, not because you necessarily think they're going to happen, but because they're going to happen somewhere. Mm-hmm. And that looked to me like a could happen somewhere spot. It did not happen, and Alabama got on a roll. But let's take the optimistic and the pessimistic view of Alabama basketball. I'll start with the pessimistic. We always knew that the thing that could undo Alabama could be the inability to get stops. Because we saw that all year. You heard Nate Oates express frustration with his team and say things like, well, we can't defend and everybody knows it. And that just seemed to be the place where that season was going to end. But if you looked on the other side, you saw a team that could probably hit 23s on a given night. And that I'm not going to say that you couldn't defend Alabama, but it was hard because pace and things like that are big talking points in college basketball, and they should be. But I almost thought Alabama was almost pace-proof with the way that it ran its offense. You got a guard in Mark Sears who seemed to never get tired and lose his efficiency. He could play fast. They rotated the ball around the perimeter so much. So I thought that what teams could do to, you know, usually do, you see teams that can grind you to a crawl offensively. Clemson did it. And I thought Clemson could be a problem for some teams in the tournament, which it was because of that ability to do that. But Alabama, just because it just plays faster and gets the ball around the horn at a quicker pace than anybody and has a lot of guys who can shoot it efficiently, that's what I mean by sort of being tempo-proof. I thought that was always the trait that had a chance to prevail. And I think in the tournament, it did more often than not, and that's why Alabama got as far as it did.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, going forward, you got to think Nate Oates is looking to, okay, we pretty much sure Alabama, just you go by history, his teams, they've shot the three ball well since he's been there.
Yeah.
Get better at bigs. I mean, I think offensively their big guys are good offensive players that can put the ball in a basket, not necessarily around a basket, but they can put it in there. Defensively, up front, I remember last year with Bediako, they had a rim protector. Like you didn't want to go at the basket against Alabama. Didn't really have that this past year. Is that kind of are you in that thinking, or you think maybe they need to go a different route, or just to get better next year? Of course, you know, you go in the Final Four, that's a really great year, but just kind of like have the overall consistency of a season.
Well, look, everybody would like to have everything, right?
Yeah.
You'd like to have a star point guard. You'd like to have a shooting guard who gives you 18 a night and hits 45% from three. You'd love to have an eraser on the back end. You'd love to have four or five complimentary players, but it's hard to do that, right? I mean, mm-hmm. You saw maybe the one or two teams that did it, and they were in the championship game. So, look, you've seen Nate Oates been able to get elements of this and that. Let's go back 3 years when they had Herb Jones, who was player of the year. It was a guy that team defended well. The team last year, even though it didn't get as far in the postseason as this one did, was a better team overall. And part of the reason was because it defended. It had a star in Brandon Miller, who was a one and done. This year it was guys that a year ago Alabama fans had never heard of, and Mark Sears. And, you know, Rylan Griffin was on the team too, but you get the point. Guys that transferred in like Reitzel and Nelson and guys that were not household names in the state of Alabama a year ago. So Nate Oates is so good and so methodical and so just diligent in his work ethic and his methods and so purposeful that I would never count him out, you know, of getting a little bit of everything he needs. That could be possible, but here's a guy that just showed that he can also get a team to a Final Four that had some pretty glaring holes and did it in spite of it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I live in Alabama. I mean, Alabama football fans look at the basketball team. You know, they think they got to have everything, Chris. Alabama fans, they're kind of in that that mindset. We got to have everything. That's what they think. Talk about Coach Calipari leaving Kentucky. And this is kind of like a broad general question, but why did he go to Arkansas?
I think when you're at Kentucky, and look, there have been a lot of pressure on him. Somebody put out a tweet, Fairleigh Dickinson has won more NCAA tournament games this decade than has Kentucky. Now, look, that's playing a little bit fast and loose with some facts because one of those was in a Dayton game. But you get the point that I'm making. You know, you never thought with Kentucky – and especially where John Calipari had the program a decade ago, that would be a talking point. And it just felt like that $33 million buyout was an albatross around everybody's neck. It sort of bound him to Kentucky because it's hard to pay that amount to make a coach walk away, although I think Vanderbilt just did that with an amount pretty close when it got rid of Jerry Stackhouse. So there is that. But that was kind of the thing that it was almost like being in a bad marriage that everybody knew needed to end, but you had to stick it out for the sake of the kids or whatever. And with his relationships with the Tyson Chicken people and some Arkansas boosters and Hunter Yurcheck sort of being in a bind with missing out on some top targets, it's one of those, I don't know, almost marriages of convenience. Kentucky is happy because he walks away and somebody else is paying the buyout. Calipari is happier because he's walking away and not having to deal with that albatross of expectations and not making the Final Four in how many ever years it's been now, longer, what, 8 years or whatever it's been. That's one of those that you're thinking, all right, it's hard to pull off, but if you're in a spot where you can pull it off, it makes sense for a lot of people, and I feel like that's where maybe that's settled.
Yeah, you know, and that's kind of like been a commentary I've seen a lot. It was good for both. Good for Arkansas, obviously, yeah. And then good for Kentucky because, you know, just sometimes it's just you need a break. You need to separate. We've seen that a lot because it gets stale, you know. And I know we're looking at Kentucky. Well, it was 2019 last time they got out of the first weekend. What do you think – what is Arkansas getting with this John Calipari?
Man, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's part of me that says, first of all, you're Kentucky. And in Kentucky, you can do things that nobody else can do historically because of the ceiling of that program. And that can mean a lot of things. I don't mean that disparagingly, but it's a program that, oh, I can't remember now if they're number one in wins or North Carolina is. It's flipped a few times, but the point is they're up there in that discussion of top two or three programs ever, wherever you want to put them. And here's a guy who built an empire on one and dones, right? And he did it better than anybody else has ever done it and embraced it and said, hey, that might mean we need to flip an entire roster the next year. The names on the jerseys you're rooting for are completely different from year to year. But, man, that was a needle he threaded for so long. And then in the middle of when they started to slip a little bit, and sometimes with teams like that, you just don't hit for whatever reason. I remember the NIT team that lost to Robert Morris or whoever. For whatever reason, that team just didn't hit. And occasionally with young kids, you know, some of them aren't as good as they were cracked up to be. You have chemistry issues, whatever. There are ways we can name where it goes wrong. But it felt like, for the most part, he had that one-and-done model. And you all remember where it started with Cousins and Wall and some of those guys on his first teams and how good they were. Well, and then comes COVID in 2020, and the tournament gets canceled, and the landscape changes, and the portal opens, and NIL, and all these things. And all of a sudden, the way that he's built his program, he's vulnerable because now other teams are fielding teams that aren't as talented as his. But, like, you look at UConn in the tournament. Cam Spencer is a 24-year-old shooting guard. Out of high school, he averaged 3 points a game at a Patriot League school his first year. Well, you let a guy play college basketball for 5 or 6 years, and he's got a chance to be better than your freshman McDonald's All-Americans just by virtue of being, you know, 4, 5, 6 years older. And so I think you have that landscape then where just age becomes a factor, and it's antithetical to the way you built your roster. I don't know that that was all of it, but certainly it was part of it. Again, you look at UConn and how old it was in some spots and some other teams that made runs. And, you know, look at Tennessee. Dalton Connect was kind of a non-factor out of high school. I don't think he even had a Division I offer, went JUCO. Sometimes guys like that, just spending time in college ball, develop to a point to where if I'm matching my older guys up against your younger guys, just by virtue of having played a lot of ball, I might be able to beat you. That's a lot of words to say that I think that the landscape of roster building changed beneath his feet and had a lot to do with it. But I think you have to look at that as a factor when you wonder why is it gone not as well for John Calipari in Kentucky the last 5 or 6 years.
And of course, you got to, you know, the conversation, who's going to be the next head coach at Kentucky. Of course, you know, everybody know we're recording this on Tuesday, so by the time this comes out Thursday, they may have a coach. We'll see. Plenty of big names have been mentioned. I mean, Nate Oates was one that was mentioned, you know, for people here in Alabama, which he's done, put out a statement trying to talk that down. Then you got Billy Donovan's name's been mentioned. Of course, he's with the Bulls. Dan Hurley, Scott Drew. What's your thoughts? I mean, just going, who could be the next Kentucky head coach?
Well, I think if I'm Dan Hurley, I'm staying where I am, which sounds like he's already kind of sent that shot out there. Again, we're doing this on Tuesday, so if any of this sounds ridiculous by the time people hear it, that's why. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of guys that could probably work at Kentucky. I guess the question is how many of them want to deal with the other stuff, the constant attention, the constant expectation that you're in a Final Four and winning the SEC every year and a date and time where it's just not as easy to do that anymore. Billy Donovan's a name that's made sense to most people, but he's been out of the game for 9 years and everything has changed. So I don't know if that works. Nate Oates would have been a good choice basketball-wise. Personality fit, I don't know. I don't know that Nate Oates wants all the attention and the stuff that goes with being Kentucky's basketball coach, which is probably why he's not going to be. I think that Scott Drew's name, that was one that I was told by a source, might be the leader, but, you know, they haven't been to a ton of Final Fours either. Of course, it's Baylor. It's different. Man, I don't know. Bruce Pearl's one that would be a great fit for a lot of reasons. You know, I think in terms of guys who can handle the spotlight, he's probably one of them. I think really to me, a successful marriage for Kentucky is going to be a guy who not only has demonstrated a track record to win, but could handle the public circus that comes with that job. And I think if you can draw a line that intersects through both those traits, that's where your good coaches are going to be.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, you don't see these jobs, these high profile jobs open up like this, and it's going to be interesting. When Arkansas and Kentucky play each other next season, that's going to be a fun one.
Yeah, I mean, it always is anyway, and that was a game that, you know, a couple decades ago was the one you circled on the calendar, and frankly, one I circled on the calendar this year, but Arkansas didn't come close to meeting expectations, and Kentucky really didn't either, and that would maybe have a chance to pump some fuel back into what has always been a very interesting rivalry.
Yeah, I remember those. Nolan Richardson, and Tubby Smith, Pertino, yeah, and all this stuff. I mean, those were some knockout. Those were a lot of football games on the court, really, when Arkansas was involved back then.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's when Arkansas first got in the league. And Kentucky was kind of not used to being challenged for supremacy. And those were some fun times back in the mid-90s when Nolan Richardson had Arkansas rolling, and Rick Pitino was doing the same at Kentucky.
You know, when I, you know, kind of close up our conversation on this too, with Kentucky, kind of feel like the same thing with Calipari, because, you know, when he was dominating, winning, the league was not always great. I mean, it's not, you know, back then, it's not where it is now. You know, the SEC, these teams started getting better coaches. You were talking about Nate Oates, Bruce Pearl, Rick Barnes, and, you know, so many other names. Really, the conference got leveled up to Kentucky's level too.
Phil, that's a really good point. That's probably not one that enough people bring up. Let's go back and look at pre-John Calipari landscape in the SEC. You had Billy Donovan just won a couple of national championships at Florida. I'm not going to say the league was bad, but it was usually at that time, Florida, Vanderbilt, Kentucky were pretty consistently good. Tennessee was good under Bruce Pearl at the time. But the rest of the league was kind of hit and miss. And you fast forward to now. I mean, if you had said 10 years ago that Auburn and Alabama were going to be basically powerhouses in the league and sell out the buildings every night, I think people would have laughed at that, but that's where we are. I'll give you another good example. Ole Miss has not been one of the most basketball-relevant schools around, but Ole Miss has now got a top 10 coach in Chris Beard. Mm-hmm. And I know how that happened. I know it's kind of a special situation. In a normal spot, Ole Miss is not going to get a Chris Beard, but it's got a Chris Beard. And Oxford's a place where the care level for basketball hasn't been very high historically, and there haven't been a lot of wins, a lot of NCAA tournaments and Sweet 16s and no Final Fours and all those things. And all of a sudden, you've got a program that's trying to think like a perennial Final Four type team with the hire it made, in spite of the baggage that came with it. And I just think you look across the league, Tennessee's been a school that's been kind of up and down. Rick Barnes has had them on a pretty good trajectory the last half dozen years or so, where they're consistently good. You've got some teams like Tennessee that have risen up to play ball at pretty much near their historical best levels. And then some schools that, you know, were kind of afterthoughts in the basketball landscapes that have either done what Auburn's did and got to a Final Four, or are really putting forth an effort the way Ole Miss has. And the night in, night out, you know, you can just go and mark off, if you're Kentucky, you know, 10 games on the schedule that you know you're going to win. You might mark down a loss or two, and then you've got maybe half dozen toss-up games at most. It's not that way for Kentucky anymore. Night in and night out, the competitive landscape is a lot different.
Yeah, I remember years, there were some the teams Calipari had, you know, he had all the five-star freshmen coming in. Some people were like, could this team go undefeated in the SEC? You wouldn't dare have that conversation now.
No. No, I mean, look, like I said, Connecticut, it, to start back where we started, I watched that team. It was hard to see how they lost the game to anybody. Mm-hmm. I know injuries were part of it, but even a team that dominant is not going to run the table. I think Kentucky teams that used to lose, you know, 3, 4, 5 games now, you roll that same team out there because of the portal and just the competitive landscape and the way it is hard to dominate college basketball now, maybe that same team loses 8 where it would have lost 5 before.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting where Kentucky goes. And just, you know, the conference overall, I think the basketball side with the league is healthier than it's probably been in a long, long time. And I think me and you could probably keep talking about this stuff for another 25 minutes. But yeah. I told you 28 went a few minutes over. We didn't get to the football stuff we was going to talk about, but it's been fun.
Well, I've got a minute if you need it, so.
All right, so since we talked Alabama and hoots, we'll leave Alabama to the side in football. Auburn football. Of course, they had their spring game this past weekend. Everybody's a question with Auburn. I think everybody's is quarterback. You know, Bruce. I about to say Bruce Pearl. I'm so focused on basketball. Hugh Freeze has made a point getting better at all positions. But just your thoughts, Hugh Freeze going into year two. What would be? Just what are your thoughts with Freeze going into year two, and just how important that is?
Well, I mean, it's always important. You know, Auburn has had runs where it's, you know, one a few years in a row against Alabama, and then when that bar of expectation gets raised and it doesn't continue, that's when a coach is gone. Now, Alabama's taken it to a different level the last 15 years or so, but the fact remains that Alabama and Auburn are always going to be tied very closely together, and whenever coach loses a couple games in a row to the other one's probably going to be out of a job. Now, I'm not saying Hugh Freeze has to come in and beat Alabama this year, but you know how that works in that state because you've seen it. I was surprised last year that Auburn wasn't better offensively, but I guess it goes to show you that if you just got some limits at some spots, and certainly theirs was in the wide receiver room, that it's just not going to work no matter how smart your coach is. There's too much talent in this league. I think now as much has been made of them revamping their receiver room through the portal and through high school recruiting. And for full disclosure, I've not seen their spring game. My head has been really entrenched in baseball and basketball. But I think you got to have quarterback play and receiver play. That was something that Auburn didn't have a year ago. Maybe more on the receiving room than the quarterback room, given Peyton Thorne's track record at Michigan State, where he'd had some good seasons. But I think they got to get that right. I think the defense was pretty respectable. It wasn't the most probably star-laden defense with names and draft picks that Auburn's had, but I think anytime you're a coach who's renowned for offense and you're pretty decent on that side of the ball, that's got to be a little bit encouraging, because I think you give Hugh Freeze time and you would have to think that offensively he'll figure it out. So I guess if you want to put a sunny spin on it, maybe you can explain their offensive struggles a year ago just by talent and personnel issues that he inherited that were just not enough time in the cycle to fix But they were pretty competitive on defense, and that's what you always worry about with offensive coaches.
Yeah, I remember his first comments when he took the job. I think when he first got in front of the team in practice in last spring, he said, this does not look like what an Auburn roster should look like. So, I tell you one thing, just a little cliff notes on the spring game. If you do plan to go forward in at some point and check them out, they do have a receiver now in Cam Coleman. It looks like they may have a star there, but again, quarterback, you know, it doesn't matter how good you are a receiver, Chris. If you can't, you don't have a guy that can get him the ball, that's an issue. But, it's going to be interesting with them, all this basketball stuff. And, I appreciate you taking the time and go a little bit longer, than we had planned. If the listeners, viewers want to check you out, where they can find you and, tell them about Southeastern 14.
Yeah, Southeastern 14 exists to cover football, baseball, and basketball at a very high level. We've kind of taken a few weeks off with football, although we've gotten back into that. We've hired a guy from your state named Chase Robinson. You may or may not know Chase.
Oh, yeah, he's been
really
on the show.
Good job of he covers college football for us now, or SEC football. So we just got that off the ground with Chase last week. We'll be putting some more stuff out this week. We're just going to do some topic-based things. Of course, we've covered basketball wall-to-wall. Anytime there's a coaching change, we've got that. We've, of course, broken down all the games involving SEC on SEC this year, all the tournament games, and now turning my attention really hard towards baseball and what is a hyper, hyper competitive league, and really spending a lot of bandwidth on that. So if you want to get the highlights of what's going on in all three sports, I think you'll love what we do, and you can find our work on YouTube at Southeastern 14.
Yeah, I highly recommend everybody go check out Southeastern 14. You guys do a great job. I know I'm a subscriber on YouTube and the podcast, so I'm always checking you guys out. And, Chris, I appreciate the time, and look forward when we can do this again sometime down the road.
Yeah, thank you, Philip. I always enjoy doing your show. You do your homework, and you're a good dude, and always a pleasure to be on with you.
I appreciate it, Chris. All right, everybody, if you're not doing anything on Saturday, there's plenty of SEC spring games this week, 8 of them to be exact. I feel like every single one of them are at the exact time, but we're going to break down one of the most important ones, if not the most important spring game for this Saturday. That is the Georgia G-Day game. And joining me is my guy, Palmer Thomas. You can check him out over at Dogs HQ, part of the On3 Network. And Palmer, appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, we were just talking about it. It's an interesting time of year where – you know, you've got football spring practice that's wrapping up. Basketball season, you know, goes into March and April. And, you know, baseball here in the Southeast is certainly something that's got a lot of attention. And then, oh, by the way, if you're in the Peach State, you got a little bit of a big golf tournament this weekend too. So just a little bit there. So it's going to be interesting to see the turnout that we have Saturday, in Athens. Not only are they doing – some stadium renovations. So I think half of it is probably going to be blocked off. That was the case last season as well, but also add in the fact that you've got a lot of folks that, you know, whether they're donors, whether they're just dads that want to be sitting on the couch, there's probably going to be a couple of eyes down on that, that big golf tournament.
Yeah, it is a big weekend with everything going on. It's like, you know, it's the NCAA tournament ends and boom, we jump right into the Masters, another big thing going on.
No downtime. I mean, I know Jim Nance isn't doing the Final Four anymore, but, man, that was what a life he was living where he was doing NCAA tournament right into going down to Augusta. So, yeah, it's a fun time. It's a fun time to be a sports fan. And then, hey, right after this, two weeks from tonight as we're recording, or 2 weeks from tomorrow as this gets published, NFL draft is right there.
Yeah, you got to think, especially for Jim Nance. I don't want to go back on that. Even the years where CBS got the Super Bowl. So you're doing Super Bowl, the NCAA tournament, and then Masters. Some would argue maybe the three biggest sporting events in this country overall. Yeah. So, man, he was living a charmed life. But I guess he had to give up the basketball stuff. And this will be we didn't even plan on talking about any of this. Vern Lundquist, this will be his final Masters.
Somebody who's near and dear to the SEC. So, yeah, now that obviously I think fans have been holding on to, tuning into the Masters and hearing his voice – But yeah, obviously somebody that's, you know, holds a special place in a lot of hearts are in this part of the country.
Yeah, so let's open it to Georgia football. And obviously last season, 13-1, I think 99.9% of the country would say, we go 13-1, that was tremendous year. But obviously a disappointment for Georgia, undefeated in a regular season, beat by Alabama, SEC championship game, did not get into the playoff. I'll argue, and I'm sure you're probably in agreement that, if you just want to say the four best teams, that whole argument, if you're saying Georgia wasn't one of the four best teams, I don't know what y'all are talking about. Last year, but still going into the spring, and this is not like obviously the G-Day game, the spring game is this Saturday, but just kind of going into the spring, kind of rewind a little bit as Georgia was getting ready for spring practice. What were like the big things you were wanting to see out of this Georgia team?
I think the biggest thing is the return of Carson Beck, and obviously that is, when you're able to get a starting quarterback back. It's just become such a springboard into your offseason. You know, listening to Kirby Smart this spring, he talked about how big of a factor that was, and you know that they really needed that decision to happen so that they could then start moving on, either A, to go look into their options and explore transfer portal quarterbacks, or B, build around the fact that they've got potentially the top signal caller in the entire country. They go with option B. Carson decides that he's going to return for a second year as a starter. We saw the strides that Georgia's offense made with a second year of Stetson Bennett as a starter, a full offseason working with the ones, being the guy, having the offensive coordinator, and we talk about Mike Bobo coming back for another year. It's another year of comfort for him. And so that quarterback coordinator relationship that there is, they are so tied together. And so now there's a full year of experience and a full year of comfort together to build on. And, you know, Georgia was able to take that big news that came down mid-December amidst the disappointment of missing out on the SEC championship and missing out on the college football playoff. They were able to take that big news and turn it into, you know, some big transfer portal news. They had three newcomers among pass catchers that are here this spring. They'll add a fourth in a tight end this summer. They add an SEC caliber high, you know, skilled running back from Florida. Five new guys on the offensive side of the ball. That to me is, probably the other biggest storyline of this spring is just how are they going to go about replacing Brock Bowers and Ladd McConkey, two guys that have a potential to be first round picks. Because you look at this defense and they've got a lot that comes back. The offense also has a lot that comes back, but the big pieces are the ones that have got to be replaced. And so, how do they go about doing that? Well, part of it was addressing the needs of those two positions in the transfer portal. Like I said, they go out and they get a skilled tight end. They go out and they get three transfer portal wide receivers to fill those holes. And, you know, now I think that you throughout this spring, we've heard a lot of buzz about the offense. And so you're just looking to see the strides that this group has made, not just this spring, but, you know, as they go into and continue to build on what they did in 2023.
Yeah. So now fast forward as spring practice has gone on, as we go into G-Day, what is something that has, I don't know, surprise is the right word, but, you know, yeah, maybe a surprise that you've heard or seen coming out of spring practice?
I think the biggest surprise for me this spring probably has been Arian Smith seemingly finding a little bit of consistency. You know, he's a guy that's in his fifth year with the program. He has been a major contributor. We've seen him have his massive moments, you know, obviously the touchdown in the college football playoff semifinal against Ohio State to get Georgia right back in that game. That's a moment that'll go down in history. And if he doesn't make another play for Georgia, he goes down in history for that. But I think that, you know, his overall career story has been, he's been hurt. He's battled injuries. When he's been on the field, he's been consistent. That was at least the case the first 3 years. Well, this past year, Arian had his healthiest season and his least productive season. And so it caused you to scratch your head a little bit and say, is this guy cut out to play in the SEC? You know, not only can he not stay healthy, but then when he does stay healthy, he's not really producing. This spring, I think he's answered some of those questions. And look, you know, I said it today over at Dogs HQ. If Arian Smith has a great spring and a great G-Day and, you know, blows it out of the park, it doesn't mean anything because, you know, you want to see it this fall. But I think that the signs of him consistently doing it and being, you know, a name that has popped up over the course of 5 weeks and not just, you know, hey, this kid made a play here, this kid made a play there. He's consistently being among the players that are being mentioned. And so I think that that's been one of the bigger surprises of the spring to me. The other would also be in that wide receiver room, and it's Colby Young. And I don't know that I'm surprised by this, but I think it is certainly one of the biggest storylines. I was bullish on Colby and the potential that he can bring to this UGA wide receiver room, you know, transfer from Miami, where he was a productive player for 2 years there in the ACC. He brings something, and this has been the biggest thing that I've harped on with Young, you know, in this Georgia receiver room, is he brings something that they didn't necessarily have and they haven't had in quite some time. He was listed as 6'5" at Miami. Georgia has him listed at 6'3". He does not look 6'3". You know, we've seen him. He definitely looks more closer to 6'5". So if you want to middle it out there and call him 6'4", I feel comfortable calling him, you know, close to 6'5". Either way, Georgia hasn't had a go up and get it type guy like that maybe since George Pickens. And you know, obviously Pickens' last year, he was, you know, banged up and battling coming back from an ACL injury. It's been a while. You know, Lawrence Cager might be the last one. You go back to that 2019 season, and ironically, another transfer from Miami. So I'm excited to see him on Saturday. I think that that has been the biggest, you know, maybe the biggest storyline of the spring, but the biggest surprise, those two go hand in hand. It's been that wide receiver room and the emergence of both Colby Young as a newcomer and Arian Smith that's been around the program, but is starting to gain a little bit of traction and find some consistency.
Yeah, and that room has a new coach, James Coley, coming back to the university. He was there from 2016, 2019, 2018, co-office coordinator. 2019, he was the offensive coordinator. And that's got to be a big thing for Kirby Smart, too, because now you bring in a guy, look, you've worked with a guy, you brought him in when you got hired at Georgia. So somebody you're familiar with that knows how you run your program. So you're not having to teach somebody how you run things, how your program runs. So kind of interesting bringing him back and to see how the impact he has on that group.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that sometimes a player like Arian, you know, is somebody that has heard the same message over and over and over again. Sometimes a fresh perspective on things, you know, kind of gives you a new lease on life. And so, you know, that I think that's exciting. I think on the defensive side of the ball, bringing in somebody that hasn't been around the program but has been around A, coaches of the program, and B, programs like this program, you know, T-Rob, Traverse Robinson in the secondary to replace Will Muschamp. Obviously, those two spent a lot of time together, and Kirby and Will have spent a lot of time together. But then T-Rob was at Alabama, and so he was in a Nick Saban, Kirby Smart type defense. He knows what the expectations are at a program like Georgia. That's another huge addition. You know, Georgia brings in four new assistant coaches this offseason. After last year, there were zero new assistants to the program. Obviously, Mike Bobo was replacing Todd Monken, but he was a upgrade, you know, or a promotion within the staff, you know, from analyst to coordinator. These four guys are coming from outside the program. You've got Josh Crawford, who's coming from Georgia Tech, you know, and is going to be, he was the wide receivers coach at Georgia Tech. He interviewed for the wide receivers coach position at Georgia, ends up getting the running backs coach to replace Del McGee, who's now at Georgia State. Obviously, James Coley, like we mentioned, replacing Brian McClendon, now with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. T-Rob replacing Will Muschamp. Muschamp is staying with the program, but it's stepping down into an analyst role. Wants to enjoy some family time. His youngest son is going to be a true freshman quarterback at Vanderbilt. And so he wants to be able to experience Saturdays up in Nashville, just like he did, you know, as a father for his older son, Jackson, who has been on the team here in Athens for the last few years. And then you're bringing in Dante Williams in the secondary as well to coach cornerbacks, replacing Fran Brown, now the head coach at Syracuse. So a lot of new faces. And I think that that has been, you know, another storyline of the spring. But I think that a lot of those guys, Dante was here for the bowl prep. T-Rob has been at programs like Georgia. James Coley has been at Georgia. You know, I would say Josh Crawford probably had the most to learn because he was coming from, you know, Georgia Tech and Western Kentucky, and that was his background. But at the same time, he also has a background of high school coaching in the state of Georgia. So he knows what it takes to, you know, be around this part of the country.
I'll tell you what, it just popped in my head. You're talking about T-Rob. You know, his alma mater is Auburn. He is not making them people happy. He was coaching at Alabama. Now he's coaching at Georgia. I mean, he's just hitting on all the rivals.
And he's been at Florida. Did he make a trip back to Auburn briefly with Muschamp there?
He did. The 1 year Muschamp was at Auburn. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. The year Auburn was supposed to put the world on fire, the Gus Malzahn, Will Muschamp. The funny thing about that year, though, for Auburn, though, was the defense was the streets. It wasn't the offense. Because everybody said, because that was off the Nick Marshall seasons, right? You know, they said, man, if Auburn gets a defense, look out with the Gus Malzahn offense. And then that was the, I believe that was the Jeremy Johnson season.
That's what I was just thinking. I was just looking up to see the Jeremy Johnson Heisman hype. We were talking about that here recently.
Yeah. No joke. He is playing in the Mexican American Football League. He won a undefeated team last year, won a championship. I follow all things football, and I actually caught some games on YouTube last year. Well, we know what the talent level is not that good, probably down in Mexico, but still, he went undefeated, won a championship. So he's having some football success. Let's talk about. Okay, I want to start with Brock Bowers. You mentioned a little bit the question. I mean, obviously, you look at the offense, the centerpiece of the offense when he was healthy, Brock Bowers. And I still say this, and Alabama fans are about to get mad at me, anybody listening to this or watching this. I honestly believe healthy Brock Bowers, Georgia beats Alabama in the SEC championship game. That's just my feeling on that one. Alabama fans, you know where to find me, at P. Jordan SEC.
And Alabama fans would throw out the Jameson Williams right back at the Georgia fans.
I know.
Maybe that's evened out a little bit.
Yeah, I honestly don't hear that as much now since they said, well, you know, the other side of it, well, it was hit too. But Oscar Delp, you know, you see he's the guy coming back. And you think, okay, he's going to be the guy that steps in that role, but you also they're bringing a transfer. How do you see Georgia working with that, with the tight end position, with Brock Bowers now, gone off to the NFL?
You know, I think it's – we don't really know yet. Because Ben Jurecek, the kid from Stanford, is graduating from Stanford this summer. So he still has not been on campus and been with the team. So how is he going to fit in? I think, you know, based on what he did at Stanford, I think he's going to fit in just fine. I think that he's going to fit into that Brock Bowers role, and you're going to see Oscar Delp continue to play the Oscar Delp role. And I think that Oscar Delp in that secondary tight end, bigger blocking threat, a guy that is really bought into that, you know, and having to replace Darnell Washington last year, that's where he made his name, you know, and really bought into the fact that he had to develop as a blocker. So, you know, I think that they will expand that role. And, you know, Oscar's best games came when Brock was not healthy. That makes sense. You know, I think that he is certainly a capable receiving tight end. But I think that Ben Jurecek is going to kind of take over that Brock Bowers role. Interested to see what Lawson Lucky does. He's somebody that had a big spring last year, was a true freshman. You know, in his first couple of months last year, was on his way to a big fall camp before suffering an ankle injury that required surgery. He came back. He wasn't he was behind. You know, he had a lot of confidence that he had to regain. So I'm interested to see what he can do with the full offseason and, you know, getting back to full health and again, more opportunity in that tight end room. Look, the tight end position is still going to be a very important part of Georgia's offense. And I think that they have shown that through the way that they recruit. They are going to continue to make that tight end position important, whether it's Oscar Delp or Ben Jurasek or Lawson Lucky. They are going to find a way to keep that position involved because it just creates mismatches. When you have guys that are that big and that athletic, it makes life really, really tough on the defense.
And, you know, you talk about receiver and you talk about Trevor Etienne coming in. That's a big get. I mean, over 700 yards. And he was sharing the role at Florida at running back, 14 touchdowns. We've seen what he can do. But Carson Beck, I mean, last year was impressive. And look, I'm going to go back to the Auburn game last year. That was growing up game.
No doubt.
You're injured in hair, hostile environment. I mean, Auburn had them on the ropes, and then they're in the fourth quarter just making the throws, bringing Georgia back. I mean, yes, Brock Bowers, big part of that, but still, he's got to get the ball to Brock Bowers, and he did not fold. I mean, throw an interception early in the game. In that situation, we've seen a lot of young quarterbacks just fold up in that moment, but he didn't. He came out and he made the plays. And as the year went on, one of the best quarterbacks in the country, I think, and obviously a guy that, you know, he could have went pro, but he's coming back. Oh, what's been the biggest things you've seen out of Carson Beck where he's grown? And now we're going into this next coming football season. He's going to be one of the guys we're going to talk about for the Heisman Trophy.
It's the confidence. And I think a lot of it, you're right to circle back to that Auburn game because that was his first road start. That was the first time that he really faced adversity there. You know, I guess Georgia trailed against South Carolina, but it never really felt like Georgia was going to lose that game. There was a lot of feeling that Georgia could lose to Auburn. Because of that road atmosphere, because of how tough it is to play on the plains, you know, and I felt like that, like you said, that was an opportunity for him to grow up. That was an opportunity for that team to grow up, you know, and Georgia's going to have opportunities to grow up this year. You know, guys that are stepping into those bigger roles, whether it's to replace Brock Bowers or to replace guys in the secondary where they've got three off to the NFL with Kamari Lassiter and Tyke Smith and Javon Bullard. You know, guys are going to have to grow up all around this Georgia team. When you're as talented as UGA has been and you are putting as much into the NFL as UGA is doing on an annual basis, guys are constantly having to grow up. And also guys that, you know, are stepping up for other guys that have transferred off to other places. You know, but for Carson specifically, I think that just that confidence has grown. And I fully expect it to continue to grow. You know, again, I go back on what I said about Georgia in that jump from 2021 to 2022 offensively. Stetson Bennett was so much more comfortable and so much more confident that he was the guy. I don't know that Carson questioned that he was the guy as much because he's certainly physically capable of making those plays. He showed that time and time again last year. You know, so I don't think that there was as much doubt with Carson. But I think that, you know, just another year of comfort, another year of growing into that leadership role, it's only going to help this Georgia offense. And I think that, you know, again, like I said, there might be growing pains early on having to figure out an identity replacing a guy like Brock Bowers that has been the identity of this Georgia team the last 3 years. But I think that, again, they've got the talent and they've got a quarterback that when you've got a guy like that, he can bring that confidence and you know, make guys believe that they are capable of doing it. It helps, you know, from a quarterback's perspective, it helps to have the players around him. You know, but I think that so much is put on the weight is put on the shoulders of that quarterback to make the plays. And, you know, knowing that you've got a guy like that, you know, if you're a skill player, a perimeter player for Georgia, it's a lot easier to step into, you know, that kind of a role than it is the one where all eyes are on you at quarterback. And so I just expect the confidence to be, you know, exponentially better for Carson this year. You know, and I think that, again, it'll take time for him to develop, you know, the chemistry and the comfort level with some of these new guys. That's what spring practice is about. That's what this summer is about. That's what those early games are going to be about. Now, it's not like Georgia, you know, eases into this its schedule as much as it is, as much as it did last year. You've got Clemson in the opener. You've got a road game at Kentucky early on. Oh, by the way, you have Alabama in the first month of September there. You know, Texas is in your first half of the season. It's not like Georgia's easing into things, but mm-hmm. when you have a quarterback that has been around the block like Carson has been, I'd feel a lot more confident about this team and this offense specifically going into 2024 with that confidence.
Yeah, and you hear it all the time, you know, NFL level, and I think it's that way in college too. A team that has that guy quarterback, when you're in those tough games, it's a fourth quarter tie game, or maybe you're down, or you're maybe barely up in the game. If you got that guy, he gives confidence to the rest of the team. Hey, we're going to win this game. So like you said, a team like Clemson, you're going to Tuscaloosa, going to Texas. If any of those games are dicey going into the fourth quarter, you got to look at this team. It's like, okay, yeah, we're down, and it's not been the way we wanted to go, but we've got that guy behind center.
You're going to be able to look at Carson Beck, and there's not going to be any fear, any doubt in his eyes that he is capable of making the plays to get Georgia either back in that game or get Georgia over the top in that game.
Yeah, so that is a very, very exciting part of this football team. Defensively, you know, we've spent a lot of time on offense. I've kept you a few minutes longer than I said. I think we always go a little longer than what we initially planned. I know for me, a couple things I mentioned with Georgia. Michael Williams going from defensive end, look, trying to at linebacker. That's an interesting thing. And then the secondary, you lose Kamari Laster, you lose Javon Bullard in your secondary. Obviously got, you know, Starks and Everett coming back. What are some what are you going to be paying most attention to with the defense? What's the biggest storylines you think there?
Yeah, I think for Saturday specifically, it's you've got to grade this defense on a curve because they are going to be without Smile Mundon, who's an All-American caliber inside linebacker. You're going to be without Malachi Starks, who is an All-American at safety, potentially the best defensive back in the country. You know, I think that, you know, so you grade those guys on a curve a little bit, knowing that, hey, you're a guy that makes a lot of things right is not going to be there. And so if things go wrong, you know, not to mention the fact that you're going up against a quarterback like Carson and that offense that we've been talking about for 20 minutes now, they're going to get tested. They're going to get beat. Not to mention it's an air show. That's what G-Day turns into. That's what all these spring games turn into. You don't mm-hmm. necessarily want to put the tread on the tires. You don't want to wear down the tread on the tires in a game like this with those offensive linemen and those running backs and just the physicality that it takes to run the football. So Georgia is going to be asking the quarterbacks to throw a lot. That's also asking these young secondary to make plays and to do it consistently. And so I look at, you know, Julian Humphrey and Daniel Harris, two guys that both flirted with the transfer portal, both decided to come back to Georgia. You know, they are competing for that cornerback spot opposite of Daylon Everett. I'm excited to see the kind of jump that Everett takes. I think at a lot of times last year, he caught some criticism. But you know, again, when you're opposite of Kamari Lassiter, teams aren't going to throw it a potential, you know, first round, day two NFL draft pick. They're going to throw it the guy that's in his first five career starts. You know, so I'm excited to see what Daylon Everett does. Talk about that confidence, you know, just the amount that you're able to gain over the course of a full season, coming back, knowing that you're capable of doing it. You know, interested to see how that kind of works in the secondary. You know, Georgia is more than willing to rotate guys, especially when you've got as many as they do. You know, do we see the 2 5-star freshmen that are in the secondary, and KJ Bolden and Ellis Robinson? You know, Janelle Aguero is somebody that had a lot of excitement about him coming out of high school just a couple of years ago. And now he's, you know, stepping into a spot where he is going to be one of the guys, whether it's at safety or at star, you know, Georgia is going to be counting on him. So very, very interested to see kind of how that secondary plays out. You mentioned Mykel Williams at linebacker. The linebacker position, you know, on the inside, you've got, again, Smile Mundon is coming back. He won't be there. C.J. Allen and Raylan Wilson played a lot of snaps last year as true freshmen. Excited to see their development. Jalen Walker is somebody that plays on the inside, but also, you know, is a little bit of a hybrid guy. He calls himself, he's not an OLB, he's not an ILB, he's an HLB. He's a hybrid linebacker. You know, and Georgia, you know, he likes that. He likes that role. He's able to do a lot of things. So I'm excited to see, you know, again, Georgia, another year of using him in that kind of role and the kind of confidence and comfort that he gains from it. But, you know, the opportunities that it creates for Mykel Williams as he potentially drops back more. I will say this. I'm a little skeptical about the Mykel Williams situation until we see it playing out consistently, because Georgia did this with Trayvon Walker. Georgia recruited Mykel pitching, you know, linebacker as part of the plan for him. He's had his hand in the dirt a lot, and majority of the time. And I would still imagine he's going to have his hand in the dirt a lot. He told us this spring his primary position coach is still Trey Scott, Georgia's defensive line coach. He's still working and with the defensive linemen majority of practice. I think somebody as skilled as him, they're going to try to, you know, in first and second downs, when run stopping situations are there, they're going to try and put his hand in the dirt and, you know, have him play that line of scrimmage. But then I think that when Georgia has been moving him inside to pass rush from the interior, maybe you let a guy like that stay out on the edge some. And so that's where that outside linebacker type situation comes in. But, you know, whether it's him, whether it's Damon Wilson, who was another five-star at that position, Georgia's got a lot of options. I think that they are going to be much, much better rushing the passer, you know, with those guys. And then, a veteran group on the defensive line, it's a group that, you know, I would say I've got a little bit of doubt about, you know, they, but I think at the same time, some of the expectations of Georgia fans and folks that watch this team on a, you know, very frequent basis, they might be, the expectations might be raised a little bit because of what we saw in 2021 and what we saw with Jalen Carter. You know, the last two seasons prior to 2023, you had four first round defensive linemen in Jordan Davis, Trayvon Walker, Devontae Wyatt, Jalen Carter. Georgia didn't have that in 2023. And I'm not sure that they have that in 2024 either, but they're going to have experience. They're going to have veterans, guys that have been in those roles. And so how much do those guys grow and how much do the guys behind them continue to develop to potentially make that room that much better? Those are the storylines on the defense. You know, again, I think that G-Day, spring games, it's really hard to judge the defense because they are put in situations that they probably aren't being put in, you know, on a regular basis during a game, just because it's not realistic. You're not rushing the passer, you know, full speed ahead and taking down a quarterback. You're not facing the run as much as you would. So, you know, add all that onto the fact that you're going to have two All-American caliber starters on that defense that won't be suiting up. I'm judging this defense on the curve, on a curve Saturday.
Yeah, and in that end of the day, these spring games are for the fans. Because I heard them even talk about this past Saturday watching the Auburn 8A game. The announcers joked. They said, "Do we have to have people here?" Like, basically, Hugh Freeze would rather have a regular practice, not this. Yep. I think all coaches are that way. So, yeah, you're going to throw the ball more because you do want to put on a show. You want to learn some stuff about your team, obviously, but you also want to put on a show for the fans.
And then it's about the young guys. It's about getting some of those. So, again, I mentioned those freshmen. You know, Georgia's got was the number one ranked recruiting class. So, I think that those guys are going to have their first opportunity to suit up and front of the fans. You know, it's about showing the fans, yes, it's about getting your team better and using that as the 15th spring practice session, but it's about entertaining those fans too, you know, and giving them a taste of what this team could look like in the fall. And part of that is going to be those true freshmen.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting. Everybody can check it out Saturday, 12 o'clock Central Time, 1 o'clock Eastern, over on ESPN+. Most of the SEC spring games are on streaming. But Palmer's been a lot of fun. I think we are all smarter about the Georgia football team now that I've had you on the show. We now know how the depth chart should look and all the different players. I appreciate you coming on as always. But listeners want to and viewers want to follow you online. Where can they find you and all the work you're doing?
Yeah, it's at Palmer Toms, PalmerThomBS on social media, and then at Dogs HQ at DAWGSHQ. Like I said, we've got a great crew over there, an exciting time. You know, always stuff going on in the Georgia sports market, whether it's football, basketball, baseball. You know, certainly a lot of recruiting that's going to be happening this summer with official visits and Georgia, you know, continuing to be right up at the top of this sport that we all love. So, you know, great time to check it out, check out our work and check out the crew that we've got. You know, myself, Jake Rowe, Jeremy Johnson, Rusty Mansell, and Jake Roos. You know, I feel like for what it's worth, I feel like we've got the best crew out there in the Georgia market. So come check us out, dogshq.com.
Not to be confused with the Jeremy Johnson we spoke about earlier. Let's clear that up for everybody. But anyways, Palmer, appreciate the time, and I look forward to talking again sometime down the road.
Absolutely.
All right, and then once again, thanks to both Chris Lee and Palmer Thomas for going to show. As I get out here, just a schedule of spring games. That's some stuff going on this weekend to check out. We have some interesting ones too. It is loaded this weekend. On Saturday, just an interesting one. Coastal Carolina is playing an 8:30 a.m. spring game. I bet there'll be a lot of people for that one. North Carolina has one at 9 a.m. But that will be on the ACC Network Plus now. But they're not really having a spring game. They're having just a practice. So that's all that is with that one. Then just kind of like moving on the schedule. This is interesting. Ohio State, this is the first time ever a spring game will be on national broadcast television. Boston College, I mean, they play there too. Ohio State, 11 a.m. on Fox. So you can check that out over there. Then SEC, like I said, there's eight SEC teams playing spring games this weekend. You have Arkansas, Florida, and Georgia, all of them, 12 o'clock over SEC Network Plus, ESPN Plus. Also, Georgia Tech, they'll be playing theirs. That will be another ESPN Plus. Kentucky, they also play at 12 on ESPN Plus. Tennessee, 12 o'clock, another one, ESPN Plus on that one. If you're interested, Pac-12 is still a thing. The Pac-12 network is still a thing. Utah, they'll play theirs at 12 o'clock. LSU, they are at 1 o'clock on ESPN Plus. Penn State has theirs at 1 o'clock over on the Big Ten Network. And then big one here. A lot of us be interested. We'll be talking about this next week as well. Alabama, they'll be on ESPN at 3 o'clock with their spring game. A lot of people are expected out for that one. Miami plays theirs at 3 o'clock, as does Ole Miss ESPN Plus on those. So those are some interesting upcoming spring games. We still have some for next week, not as many. But check this out. Fox is really putting in on the Big Ten. They are going to, on the 20th, Michigan will have theirs nationally televised on Fox. So you'll get Ohio State 1 week and then Michigan the next week over there on those networks. Just out of curiosity, let's just look and see. No. So that's the only ones you'll have nationally broadcast, but by Fox, they're doing that. So quite interesting spring football on national television. But anyways, and also if you're a fan of the Birmingham Stallions, they're 2-0, the defending champs of the USFL. Of course, XFL and USFL merge for the UFL. They'll be taking on Memphis, who's 1-1, 6 o'clock on Fox. The Braves have a weekend series with the Marlins, and they will close out their series against the Mets on Thursday night. Braves currently of this recording are 7-3 on the season. And that's going to do it for this week's edition. No, it went long. I might be seeing some longer episodes. Figure do an open, have a couple guests, close it up. Anyways, hope you guys enjoyed the conversations. Got more for next week on the show. And we drop those individual interviews as well over on YouTube and other outlets as well. Remember, you can follow me on social media at PJordanSEC. Podcast is available on all your favorite podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. If you're on Apple Podcasts, please follow, rate, and review. Leave a review. I will read it on a future edition of the show. You can also check out the show over at Wiregrass Daily News. Please do so over there. And you can email me, sportsoffieldjordan@gmail.com, and check out all my written work over at Last Word on College Football. Hope everybody has a great weekend. I'll talk to you guys next week. Till next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to The Philip Jordan Show. Subscribe to the audio podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can watch the show over at the Philip Jordan Media YouTube channel. Got a question or topic idea? Email the show at sportstalkphilipjordan@gmail.com. Join us next time for more great football talk.